Hello and welcome to the latest edition of the By the Min MFC podcast. Tonight we're delighted to welcome Andrew Wilson, as well as regulars Jay and Busta. Andrew, thanks very much for agreeing to come on. It's much appreciated. How's things?
Thanks for having me. It's a joy. Brilliant to see you making the effort to do this. The By the Minute idea is a really good one, and hopefully it's successful for you. So glad to help.
Yeah, I think it'd be wrong for us not to acknowledge how successful last week's podcast with Alan Burrows was. We were absolutely delighted with the feedback. Delighted to get the club's general manager on. It was fantastic. It was people taking an hour and 40 minutes out their days to listen to it. It was great. So thank you again for that.
Burrows is a proper person. We were really lucky at Motherwell to have him as our general manager. He's one of us. He's a fan like every single one of us. He's also really clever as a person, and is going to be really successful at the club. He's on the cusp of a big year, as everyone will know. He's getting married in the next while, and he's got the job of his life, so we should be getting right behind him to make sure he can be as successful as possible.
Yeah, I certainly think that it answered quite a few of the naysayers as well. He was able to speak very clearly about his role and what it entailed, and yeah, I think I'd speak for us all when we're all quite pleased that it gave him a platform to describe his job. We'll look at the weekend and a 3-2 defeat in what was a massive game, billed by many as a must-not-lose game against Ross County. Jay, obviously in the end, a 3-2 defeat, hugely disappointing and massively concerning now that we are very much in danger of going down. Not only that, we're massively in danger of being automatically relegated as well.
Well, I mean, we've been saying for weeks that we're in a real danger of going down, so nothing's changed in that respect. When you bring in new players, it's one of those you can't really win if you need a Lara Clough. You know, people are crying out for him to make signings, to freshen up the squad, to make the squad his own. And he's done that, but you can't expect that, you know, things are all going to fit into place straight away. It was a game that obviously would have been fantastic to win, but I'm not that surprised we didn't. We were playing against a Ross County side who, when they came to Fir Park, did look hungrier than us, didn't look that far off us in terms of ability. So when you brought in new players, it's going to take a while for them to bed in. Is it time to worry? Yes, of course it is. We've just been beaten by, you know, one of our biggest rivals in that relegation battle. But I think that it's not unsurprising that we lost. And, you know, hopefully, if the players do fit in or gel and then get settled, then hopefully we can start improving. But, yeah, it's worrying, but it's not, you know, it's not, nothing's settled yet. We've still very much got a chance. I think we're 3 points ahead of Ross County, joint points with St Mirren, with a game in hand over St Mirren, so it's still very much in our own hands.
Busta, Barraclough ran the changes for Saturday's game. As Jay's already indicated, a lot of new faces in the side. Disappointing, therefore, not to get a bit of a reaction in terms of the result.
The result, as you say, was pretty poor. I think what it is, though, you know, that was only the second or third time this year that we've scored two goals in a game. You know, so we seem to be creating a bit more than we have been in the last few weeks anyway. But again, it's the stupid defending, you know, silly mistakes, things that apparently we're working on for hours in training. They don't seem to be getting any better at defending set pieces.
Andrew, have you been slightly surprised at our inability? The set pieces has been our Achilles' heels, and given that we've got, especially in Stephen McManus, such an experienced campaigner at the back, we lose a lot of sloppy goals.
We do, and I think, you know, there's been a catalogue of things gone wrong this year by my observation. You know, the wrong sort of players were injured. We had lacked creative players for much of the first half of the season. We had no left-sided players at one point in the squad. You know, if we think about it across a longer span of time rather than the crisis of the moment, we've had a really good run of luck for quite a long time. We've had season after season of very significant performance. We've tended under Stewart to lose crunch games, which surprised me always. I think I can only think of the St Johnstone Hampden semi is one of the crunch games that we won. So we're now under a different manager and there's a squad transition. I don't think we should be overly worried as a result of any one game, but obviously the situation we're in now is desperately worrying. From a board perspective, though, we at least have cash in the tank now, which means we don't have to, you know, worry for our existence, which, frankly, without Les Hutchinson's injection, we would have been doing. So as fans, we should see through this and get behind the manager that's been selected by the board that we support and give them a chance. Now, every week in, week out, it's desperately worrying when you see a bad game and a bad result. But the last thing we want to do as fans is to take the fragile self-confidence of players and make it worse. Our job as fans, I think, is obviously to make our views known to the manager. But when the whistle starts till the whistle ends, we should be right behind the guys, because the older we get, the more you realise that with one or two exceptions, these are young guys who are trying their best to make their way in a trade that they're just getting going in, and we just need to get behind them. And for fans, for the rest of this season, we should be the most well-supported, high-volume club on the go. We're always good in good times. We need to show that we can be great in bad times too.
It must be extremely concerning to see that dip across the board in Scottish football of attendances. It's kind of, it goes without saying that when the chips are down, a lot of supporters do tend to vote with their feet and not go. It's a million-dollar question in Scottish football, I suppose, Andrew, but how do you get these people re-engaged and get them back along to Fir Park? The next three games are all at home. Massive, massive time for the club. I know that we're talking about a future is secured, but there's still the effects of relegation would no doubt be drastic anyway. So,
I mean, on the last point first, I mean, the future's not secure. This season's secure. I mean, if we didn't get that injection in the turn of the year, this season would not be secure, given the current state of both finances and on-the-pitch performance. The future's only secure if we as fans join the society. We have about 1 in 4 of our season ticket holders as members. We need to get it to be 4 in 4. And then we'll be in a position to look ourselves in the eye and say that the club's secure. Otherwise, we're going to have to cut the player budget. And you cut the player budget and one thing happens, you become a St Mirren, who are down at that end of the table most years rather than us, who have only been there, this is the first year in, what, 6 or 7 where we've had a tangle. So that would be the first point. On the wider point, on fan engagement, we are competing against so many different things, but amongst the core that we've got, Motherwell's got a great core support of about 4,000 to 5,000 people who are completely loyal to the club, and that's a good base on which to compete. Where we've struggled is to get everyone else that we know is in the sort of somewhere between a further 5,000 to 10,000 people who are friends of the club, engage with it from time to time. And we just need to think of different ways to do that. And we've tried to do that. We've tried to invest over the last few years. But when things are so tight and every penny is called for the player budget, you need someone like Les coming in who's willing to invest in the boring bits of the club. Things like databases, customer systems that allow you to treat people better. And hopefully over time, engagement will increase. And you saw what Alan Burrows brought in with emails from Stuart McCall, which were great in terms of building insight into the club. What we've not yet got to is the level of professionalism where we can email people to say, you know, we notice you've not been here for three games. Can we get you to come back? What can we do? Can we give you a little discount there to maybe nudge you through the door? Things like that that are commonplace in business, we need to have a go at in Motherwell. It takes a little bit of investment that has been difficult to find in recent years, but hopefully we can now put in place.
You raised a very interesting point there in terms of the Welsh society and it needing to be 4 in 4 supporters. Is that realistic given the financial climate? I know North Lanarkshire, not the most affluent of places. People being asked to fork out for their season tickets and also being asked to fork out for a Welsh society membership. Is that sustainable?
Well, maybe you're right. I mean, the two things that we... So on the overall approach, I still think the model is correct. I think some of the details we got wrong in the design of it. So the thing that's right is that the transition to fan ownership is a good thing. The imperative that you put money in the tank and create a strategic reserve so that when things go bad, you can fall back for a year or 2 years on your savings. That has to happen because the bank of John Boyle is no longer there, and it's not fair to think that Les Hutchinson should just cough up whenever things go wrong. That's not what he's come in to do. He's loaned money to the club. So the model's right. What maybe we got wrong, were the price points all right? We thought we would get a lot more people in at the top level. We really, really thought that. And then everyone we spoke to who would be in the sort of, not quite high roller, but the richer number of our fans, a number of different things we were being told, that they would quite like to own equity, but not so keen on just society membership, that they felt the club wasn't in trouble, so why cough up? Or they had their own private reasons in their own lives as to why it wasn't a good moment. And then down into the other memberships, again, I think fans more generally, at a time when the club was doing really well on the field, and it felt that it was well run off the field, which I think it was, and is, it didn't feel like there was a crisis reason to cough up. And so we haven't got there. And of course, there's a reason you raise, which is that our home area is not the richest part of Scotland. But I do still think that there will be means by which fans, and there'll be a lot of fans out there who'll know themselves when I say it, that have probably felt to themselves, well, actually, I'll maybe join later. We don't really need to do it. And I think we're at the moment now where everyone, to the extent that they can, needs to do it. And if you can't afford it, you can't afford it. Of course, that's understood. But I think there's a big cadre of people out there who can afford it, who are maybe not yet there. And I think what we probably could have done better was what we started to do in the summer, which was to communicate just how serious the issue was. And I said in a blog post myself a couple of weeks ago when I resigned from the board, people need to understand, I can say this now I'm off the board, people need to understand how much has been given to this club by the people who are serving on that board, and highlighting, you know, without going through everyone, but highlighting Derek Weir in particular, who did everything to keep our club on the go, day in, day out, and putting his own money on the line, you know, guaranteeing loans, even paying stuff on personal credit card to get the club through. Totally brilliant guy, and if anyone sees him around Fir Park, you should shake his hand, because without him, we wouldn't be here.
That's another interesting one. In terms of, we've talked about the club's success over recent years. It's also been kind of emphasised that the budgets have been set for a top table finish, to be up in the upper reaches of the top six.
Yeah.
Looking back in that, would you say that was sensible and sustainable in terms of an approach?
Well, none of us are idiots. We sat and thought about the strategy very carefully. And everything in life is a calculated gamble, a calculated risk. If you didn't do that, if you'd cut the budget, one, the fans would have gone bananas. Two, the manager wouldn't have been pleased. Three, a lot of our best players would have left. And four, the guaranteed outcome was we'd be in a basement battle. And we weren't. And we sustained it for many years where we did better than that. What didn't happen in the calculation was, one, we didn't sell any players other than a modest fee for Henrik Ajama, and two, we didn't have a cup run to speak of. We haven't had a cup run to speak of other than the final, which is a number of years ago now. So we went out too early in too many cups. So the revenue that would have been made up, we budget, the strategy was to budget for roughly $500,000 loss at a sixth place and make good the rest with cup run or player sales. And, you know, more often than not, that would be the case. But season after season, it never came off. That's three in a row. And that was the difficulty, which is why, incidentally, we had a target of $1.5 million, because it meant that no matter what happened, you could sustain the club for getting $1.5 million in the tank as a strategic reserve. You could sustain the club in years of underperformance. So everything's thought through. Everything's debated at great length. People who are stewarding the club are very clever. They're not stupid, and they know when they're taking a risk, and they only take that risk when they think they can cover it. And what we communicated consistently over the last year was, unless we get the society thing up to where we need it to be, we're then going to be in a position where we have to sell the club, which is where we got to in November. Thankfully, we got the best of all possible outcomes, which was the Les Hutchinson cash injection and the engagement of a man who's clearly a very serious person who knows what he's about.
Can I just ask, if you with the sort of benefit of hindsight, is there anything you would have changed about the budgeting around the last few years? The reason I ask is, I know you said that if the budgets were to be cut, fans would go crazy. But from my own experience, from talking to people and having the same debate almost, you know, a half a dozen times every season, the sort of feeling that I got from fans was that nobody really thought the budget did seem that sustainable, at least in the long term. position. Obviously, we're just fans. We don't know what goes on. There's people, as you said, who are far more clued up with the whole business side of it and the budget side of it. But I think to most Motherwell fans I spoke to, the idea of a club the size of Motherwell budgeting for top six, a cup run and selling a player, just seemed a little... I don't know, a bit risky. I think, you know, some of the words used, I remember someone describing it as criminal and ludicrous and that kind of thing. So I got the impression from fans I spoke to that there was more concern over the way we were budgeting rather than any concern over budgets being cut. Right. Again, that's not something, obviously we don't know the ins and outs, but I was just interested because obviously you've said that without Les, the club was in really dire straits. That is surely as the result of the budgeting over the last season. So it was just out of interest if there was anything that would have been changed with hindsight.
So to be clear, from my perspective, absolutely nothing would have been changed with hindsight because you would have guaranteed the same outcome. You know, if you had budgeted less, you would have had less income as well. You would have had a more parlous situation on the pitch. Your risk of relegation would have been greater. There's a reason Motherwell has outperformed its economic position consistently over time, which is this strategy has been in play with the backstop of John Boyle's generosity should things go wrong. And over the piece, things have gone very right. I mean, the club has been in rude health most of that period, albeit every year's a worry in your cash flow plan every year. What's gone wrong is that the structural bit in the strategy, which is hoping for cup success 1 year and two, or a player sale, just hasn't materialised. So at that point, we were going to have to cut the cost end of the budget. But the minute you start to do that, you start to almost lock in your position as a lower table club. The only thing I would change are the stuff that you can't control as a board, which is you would like to see, for instance, more blooding of young players, because that's the way you can create value on the field. And for managers, it can sometimes be quite difficult to do that because their performances are looked at much more short term. So we're getting to the point where we need as a club, and that's all of us, fans and everyone else, of which I am one, to understand periods like this that create the opportunity for us to start to develop our own players and create value that way. When you look at clubs like Dundee United have done that really successfully, and you think that that has to be the right approach for a club like us. But I mean, I would say MD using the word like criminal when it comes to decisions of a board needs to take a hard look at themselves, because if it was, then there would be action taken. So that's silly. And to disrespect people that are giving their all for the club to that extent, I mean, everyone's entitled to be a critic, everyone's entitled to have a pop. That's the nature of football. But show just a touch of understanding for people who are doing their absolute best to do the right thing by everyone. And no one takes risks on behalf of the institution without really thinking it through. And there's always a counterfactual. There's always a how it would have gone if we'd taken a different decision. And we might not have had the run of Europe, top table, you know, second finishes, top five finishes that we've had in the last few years, which we've all enjoyed. And we may not have had the return of James McFadden, which is another calculated gamble, which, you know, kind of didn't come off.
See, we've been, I say, a touch critical of the Welsh society in terms of the way that the project has been marketed. I think it's possibly fair to say that at the beginning of the season, perhaps times seemed so desperate financially that the promotion took a bit of a back seat in terms of the society until the message prior to the November deadline, where they needed the investment and they needed it yesterday almost. The society now for me has got a second chance in terms of Mr. Hutchison's involvement. How did the society now go about obtaining new members? And also, there seems to be things like the £10 direct debit, which is something I've taken up myself. How does that become prominent? And also, I just don't believe that the society have made their stands clear enough in terms of the availability to almost everyone, the membership options. There should be more meetings at Fir Park. There should be promotional material everywhere, whereas they don't seem to have a voice whatsoever. I've not seen anything in the last 2 or 3 weeks. And you're saying, as a former board member, how crucial it is that new members sign up. it's a bit frustrating to hear.
Yeah, well, I think the society are just individuals giving up their time voluntarily to try and make it work. I think the sort of spending money on marketing and so on is now more possible than it was before. I think you're right. I think where, you know, I and others probably weren't, I'll put this absolutely at my door because I suppose more in my remit than anyone else's to communicate this. We did put a statement out in June to stress this to people, but we made the judgment that we didn't want to make too much of a song and dance about it, because you don't want to create the sense of crisis in a club, because the minute you do that, players don't want to sign for you, some want to leave. You know, it's a thin divide. You're trying all the time to manage competing interests and competing risks, which is why things were done the way that they were done. You know, on the upside, through all of this, we've enjoyed a remarkable few years at Motherwell. The family feel of the club remains unbelievably good. We've had some real joys on the pitch, and we're having a few weeks and months of difficulty now. The financial position, again, large part down to Derek and Jim McMahon's endeavours with Les Hutchinson, is now secure, at least for the short term. So there's a lot to look to and say, actually, you know, everyone can complain about how things go at their club, but things could be a lot worse at Motherwell. They're actually, we've enjoyed a remarkable period. So let's try and look for this sunnier side of where we're at. But notwithstanding all that, obviously on the field we've got major worries. All I can keep saying is, just look at things through the course of time rather than the moment of, you know, one game or 1 week or 1 month. Get behind the club, and if you can possibly afford it, you know, campaign to get yourself and other members into the society, because that's the way forward, and we will be a properly fan-run club in due course.
Just, I think that you'll see, you know, maybe once the board sort of settle in with the real society they're now, I think you'll start to see a bit more of, you know, the promotion and things like that. I mean, by that in the next couple of months, to be fair. You know, just to put that out there on their side as well, I think you'll see that in a couple of months, maybe once they settle in at the club. You know, because it's all starting to come together now, isn't it? So maybe once that's...
Everyone can criticise. I mean, I would say, and I say this with, you know, if you feel critical, then get involved and do something about it. And it's not like the anything at Motherwell's remote from anybody else. Everyone's got the ability to go in there and have an influence if you're willing to knock your pan in and bring some talent. That's the sort of club we are. Now, it's some fans just like being able to cheer when things are good and jeer when things are bad. That's also okay. I mean, that's show business. That's the nature of it. But for people like us who want to be engaged, then just get engaged. Go and do something about it.
I certainly don't think we're not being negative for the sake of...
people in general, you know?
Yeah, I certainly don't think we're being negative for the sake of being negative. I just believe that we're... All three of us passionately care about the club. It's in terms of getting involved, we've had Brian McCafferty on the podcast, we had Alan on last week, and we very much like giving these guys a platform to let the fans know what's going on with the club, and also to help in any way we possibly can. I do believe that it's been a bit of a mistake by the club, and we spoke to Brian about this as well, not having a full-time employee of the club on that society board, because effectively it's got to come second to their day jobs and their family lives and everything else. And there's only so many hours in the day that people can dedicate to the society, whether they're a biggest fan of Motherwell Football Club or not. They still have limited time.
That's quite fair. I think there's a lot in that.
Anyway, Andrew, what we'll do is we'll move on to a few questions that we've had submitted online. Obviously, recently you stepped down from the board. Was this a personal decision? Was it influenced by the arrival of Les Hutchinson that it was an essential move?
Well, a few things at once. I mean, for a variety of family reasons, I've not been able to devote as much time to the club as I feel would be proper for someone in my position in the last year or 18 months. Secondly, with the new owner coming in, he needed three places on the board to become available. So I was happy to volunteer my position for that. I'm sure if I didn't volunteer, I may have been volunteered anyway, so it's not an act of
grace on my part. But that's the essential truth of it. I felt, I mean, obviously I engaged in all board meetings and all board business, but I felt that the time had come for me to create space for somebody else. I've been on for nearly 5 years, which is a good period of time. I never wanted to be somebody who was there in 25 years who just pitched up because they enjoyed going to the, you know, enjoyed the upsides of being a board member in terms of going, you know, going and getting well fed before a game. That's never been why I was engaged. The same is true of many other members of that board. We were there to do a job, to help John Boyle transition out, to create the fan ownership model. And it felt to me like the model's right, but we needed a different bit of energy and to take it on to success, which is what we've done. So that's why I came off.
So what now? Is it back to the usual routine of being a normal punter, so to speak? And I saw you mentioning that you'd be retaking your seat in the East Stand. Is that effective as of the Dundee game on Saturday?
I hope so. I mean, I could kind of go wherever you want to go, but I think all of my pals that I used to always sit in the East Stand with, most of them still sit in the East Stand in the same spot, although I understand someone else has now got my seat. I'll just need to live with that. But I grew up going, when the East Stand wasn't a stand, you just went and stood. Even in the days when some games you were up with swap ends. And so it's the perspective I like to watch the game from at Motherwell. I may even go along to the far end of the East Stand, but it looks like it's slightly more boisterous than it ever was in my day. My middle child Hamish is the most into football. He's desperately keen to go where they have the drums and the banner, so I might take him along there.
Have you been brushing up in your drumming skills?
Say hi. What's that, sorry? We're up the back of that section, so you can say hi if you're down there. That's what we'll do. Maybe you can get us. I'm a trained percussionist, so I could take over the drum.
We'll look forward to seeing that in action. Another big issue that's received a lot of media attention this week, Andrew, is the chat about reintroducing alcohol at football stadiums in Scotland. It's one that very much divides a lot of people in terms of some are dead against it, obviously, and then there is others that don't see any reason why Scottish football fans can't have a pint before a game or at half time. I dare say that most people that want to have a pint before the game will find a way of having one anyway, so it's not, for me, I don't really see the, I think it's a bit of a storm in the teacup, to be honest, but I would like to hear your take on it. It seems commercially that it would be a fantastic idea. It would maybe get a few sponsors on board, and God, the league certainly needs that just now. You can talk away, please.
I know, right? I mean, I know. So firstly, I'm completely in favour of reintroducing it. I've never understood or agreed with the ban. I once attended a game years ago in London between Millwall and Chelsea, where everyone was having a pint, literally at the back, where you would have a pie, and within half an hour there were horses on the pitch and a full stage. You know, I was actually sat next to Frank McClintock, and there was a full stage battle going on the pitch. It was like watching the sort of barbarian hordes. It was remarkable. So I just don't think that there's the same connection that the chief of police and others say there are. However, in the real world of real policy and politics, what do we do about it? So I would start with saying we should pilot its reintroduction at lower tension games. Now, we know there are different grades of game, where some games you don't even need to have a police officer in attendance. So why don't we introduce it at those games and just gradually see what can work and what can't? Maybe we could introduce it around or around in different capacities. And clubs like Motherwell are perfectly placed to do this. As a community club, as one with hardly any risks associated with it whatsoever. And then maybe the bigger clubs, the police will be more worried, but let's give it a go with clubs like Motherwell to begin with, and if they needed a pilot, we would be really well placed to do it. So there's that, and then there's the sort of politics of it, which obviously I'm not here to talk specifically about, but I mean, it is being used as a political, you know, tool in the game by Jim Murphy of the Labour Party. But I have to say, fair enough. I mean, that's his job as an opposition politician, is to try and get heard and to say things. And on this one, if on hardly anything else, he's absolutely correct. So I would be full square behind it. But let's not have a fight saying do it, don't do it, and then just make it an SNP, Labour or whoever else battle. Let's think cleverly about how we can actually say, well, let's try it out. I mean, I'm not saying a full-scale reintroduction. Let's say Motherwell. Let's say who else would be good. Ross County, Inverness, Motherwell. maybe Dundee United or something, maybe not. A few clubs that I've got, you know, that are very well organised, good community roots. Let's stick it back in there and see if it works. And if it works there, then try it out in some of the higher category games.
I tend to agree with you on there's no real reason why it shouldn't be there, because, you know, if somebody's going to be that drunk that are going to cause trouble, it's not because they managed to get two pints in an hour and a half at the football. You know, it's going to be the 3 or 4 hours they've had 10 pints before it. So I don't really see the problem with bringing alcohol back. Again, when I was reading through, you know, the debates over it, I don't think anybody's talking about going back to the days where, you know, you could take in your bottle of bucky and 6 cans of special brew. But, you know, it's 2 pints. You're talking, you know, 1 at half time, maybe 1 5 minutes before the game. You're going to be queuing 10 minutes to wait on your pint anyway, so you're not as if you're going to get 6 pints in you during that hour and a half.
Totally. I mean, I've been at baseball games in America where, imagine this happening in Scotland, where you shout to the guy, pass me the beer, he passes it up through the crowd and you pass your dollar bills down, you know, through 6 or 7 rows. You can imagine the money disappearing at row 1 and the beer disappearing at row 2. But there's no reason why football can't be like that. It is a bit of an insult to quite a lot of people, you know, that it's okay at rugby and it's not okay at football. What is that about? That it's you know, somehow people would get drunk while watching the game. But all the evidence is just what you've said. They're more likely to get tanked up in one of the local bars before they come in, knowing that they can't drink at a sort of peaceable rate. And you know what else? Society generally, I mean, no matter what you think, but the numbers show that society generally is becoming a lot more health conscious. The kids are much more health conscious. I mean, we might have a giggle about it, but my nephew's generation and mother were much more health conscious than we were. And we weren't bad. Society is getting better, and it's time for some of the laws to catch up with where we're all at in life. And of course some of us will misbehave from time to time. We all do. Just because we do it in a suit in an office behind closed doors at a football ground doesn't make it any different from what a fan might be doing out there as well. So I'm completely in favour of it. But I'm just saying, pragmatically, in terms of getting this done, we should be offering a couple of pilots that, you know, would be more palatable to the police authorities and to others.
I would just to jump in there, I would like to see it as perhaps an aspect of an overhaul of the whole match day experience. You touched upon you know, being used as a political football. I think I'm right in saying that what Jim Murphy's actually proposing is that you can go and queue for a pint 5 minutes before half-time and can finish it up to 5 minutes after half-time and then go take your seat again. So it's not quite, you know, what they have down in England where you get your 2 vouchers and then you can have two pints over the course of the game. I think it's important to obviously set aside what it is we're talking about. Are we talking about, you know, being allowed to have a pint during the game, or are we talking about Jim Murphy's proposals? That's where I think things start getting a bit blurred, because, you know, as you say, it is a political football. You know, he's basically been tasked with stopping the hemorrhaging of votes for Scottish Labour, and he's doing so by trying to appeal, I suppose he's doing so by trying to treat people like idiots, assuming people are going to vote for him with such a policy. But my worry is that it's, you know, it's kind of detracting from the real issues for football fans. I think that I'd be surprised if most football fans aren't for drinking at games, not because we can't go 90 minutes without a pint, but just because we're human beings, we're at entertainment the same way if you go to the rugby or you go to the cinema or you go to a gig, and therefore you should be allowed the choice to have a pint. But at a time when, you know, stewarding is a problem, you know, fans are antagonised and intimidated by jobs or stewards, at times when policing is quite heavy-handed, at times when the actual product doesn't match the prices we're being given, even the fact, you know, safe standing, these kind of things, I don't think most football fans really care about drinking at games. And my worry is that, I know the SFA are currently looking into it because they want to build a case for drinking. My worry is, you know, the SFA are currently in a position where they are getting lambasted, as usual, particularly this season, because they've blatantly tried to rip off Scotland fans for Scotland games, and they're now trying to claw that back with 4-match packages and stuff like that. So they've kind of burned their bridges with fans. And my worry is that this is going to be used as, you know, look at us, we are listening to the fans, we're making things better here, you can have a pint at games, rather than actually tackling the real issues. So I'm very much for drinking at football matches, but it should be done as part of a complete package, a complete overhaul of the matchday experience, because at the moment, you know, having a pint at half time or whatever it is isn't going to detract from the real issues in Scottish football.
I think it's a really, really intelligent point. And it could cover for, you know, continuing with a multitude of other sins in terms of how we organise things. And there's no question that the institutions that would really want it back are the clubs themselves, because it would plug a hole in the money. But I think what I hear you say is that if in doing that it stops them putting the investment in and the effort in elsewhere in terms of the fans' experience, then it would be a bad thing. I think what you've just said should be heard a lot more. You should talk more about that and write it for newspapers and get it in, because it's a good point.
Do you believe that, I suppose you'll maybe be able to talk about a wee bit more about this just now than previously when you were on the board, but I often feel that certain individuals on the board and the SPL and the Scottish FA very much demeanour game. They seem to, I think that kind of is reflected on the struggle to obtain sponsorship and what have you for a top league. It's quite embarrassing, especially, I don't want to compare us directly to the English Premier League, but you see their TV deal and then you kind of compare it to what we've got. We're very much seen as inferior, and I think that attitude comes from the top. Are those in charge, and I'm just going to mention them because you possibly know who I'm talking about anyway, Neil Doncaster, are these the best people to be advertising and promoting our game?
Well, I always feel that any time that we're pick on an individual and we praise them too much when they're good and criticise them too much when we're bad, we tend to get it wrong. Most people are human. Neil Doncaster, I know and know quite well. I know that views vary across the board. The guy I experienced tried his very, very best to be a professional and tries his very, very best to be a professional leader. The issue, I think, that if I was in his shoes that I would find difficult is that oftentimes Scottish football clubs spend all of their time whining and moaning at each other. It's a bit like, you know, Glasgow and Edinburgh cities fighting with each other for prominence rather than joining hands and saying how can we compete as one central belt. That's kind of how it goes in football. And so much, I mean, I was never on any of these committees or boards, but with the reports I heard out of it, some of the behaviour sometimes from some of the clubs were, you know, plainly weird, frankly. And I think they have a difficult job in dealing with that. And I think the same goes in the committee structure of the SFA. It has for quite a long time been very unreconstructed. And the guys that are paid employees are creatures of governance structures that are way out of date. So, I mean, I know it's always easy to be critical of, I mean, he's a well-paid guy, he's in a good job, he's a chief exec. All I would say is my experience of him has always been positive, and I know it's not always the case with everyone else, but I would be very leery of criticising individuals when actually what's wrong is something deeper. And if you pick on people rather than on structures, you tend not to get the answer, in my experience of life. You know, people often reflect their circumstance rather than, you know, and if there were better guys to do it, you know, I'm sure they would be employed and step up, but funny that they aren't ten a penny. So I think it's a bit like you were saying about the booze. I mean, I think if we pick on individuals rather than on changing the structure of the game, we fail.
Is it not the case, though, that these guys have been in the roles that they have been for so long that perhaps things have stagnated and not improved? It's horrendous to look at the fact that we've got a top professional football league with no title sponsor. In fact, it seemed like they were almost had the begging bowl out to get the League Cup semi-final sponsored there. That's embarrassing. It's almost no show without punch. Rangers and Celtic semi-final.
We have the worst TV deal, I think, proportionately, in any league in Europe. Which, given that we are or were the best supported league in Europe proportionately, is wrong. And that falls back on a very historic decision to do Sky Over, which in retrospect was madness at the time, backing the horse of Setanta, which proved to be lame. So these are the historic decisions that you take that feel right at the time, which proved to handicap you for many, many years to come.
What I'll do is I'll quickly have a few minutes on Motherwell versus Dundee on Saturday. Buster, you love me saying that every game's a six-pointer. I think we've got 3 six-pointers coming up in succession, so I'll be able to trot out that line a few times more. It is a massive, massive game. They'll travel full expectation. They've beaten us 3-1 and 4-1 already this season. Saying that, I still get this wee bit of belief, I don't know where it comes from, that we can take something from this game. We need points and we need them quick. No better place than Saturday, I suppose, Buster.
Well, I've tried to be a bit of an optimist all year, and it's not worked, so I can't see us getting anything, because every time I've seen Dundee, you know, they've been a lot better than us. I expect that to be the same, to be honest with you, again. So, you know, maybe if I'm a bit pessimistic about it here, I'll be wrong again, and we'll maybe win, so see what's what. It'll be good to, you know, get a look at the actual players, because I didn't even make it up to think, well, so it'll be good to get a look at some of the new boys, the highlights I've seen. You know, one or two of them are looking pretty decent. We seem to have 14 players now that can kick with their left foot compared to the usual one. So, you know, it'll be good to see them in action and see what's what, but I'm not going to hold my breath waiting on 3 points.
Andrew, it was Paul Quinn and Saturday returning to haunt us. We come up against another former player in David Clarkson on Saturday. It's surely about 1-10 with the bookies that he's going to score.
Aye, it seems to be coded into both Championship Manager and FIFA that this always happens, isn't it? Well, you know, I agree with what's been said. Dundee look a cracking outfit, really ambitiously put together as a squad this year, which I have to take my hat off to them about. But there has to come a point where the new manager and his new people kick in. You know, nothing good and nothing bad lasts forever. There has to be a turning point, and we've got a long enough run between now and the end of the season for us to be okay, and it has to start somewhere. And I've seen us turn around fixtures that we would never expect to, you know, to do well in. So let's go into this game believing that we can. Maybe Buster's right, just he should be pessimistic, but the rest of us should hope for something better. And the players, you know, everything in sport, I've been privileged to meet a lot of sports people in my life, from football players to rugby players, Formula One drivers, great golfers. And the thing that makes all of them successful is a sense of belief in themselves. And our players, who are on far less money than all of those sports that I just mentioned, they need to get that from somewhere, from their manager, and if not from them, then from the crowd. We need to help make them believe when they step out on Saturday that they can win, and that takes all of us to be thinking the same way.
Jay, it's possibly too early to say it's crunch time for Ian Barraclough, but he certainly must be feeling a wee bit of pressure, despite his rather relaxed demeanour in his post-match interview on Saturday. We've not won a game this year, and despite a few more encouraging performances in recent weeks, I'll exclude Saturday from that because basically I wasn't there and didn't see it. It's a results driven industry, so we really need to... Ah, thanks, Buster. I thought I'd mean another 30 seconds of editing then. I'll just start again. It's maybe a bit too early to say the pressure's on Ian Barraclough, but given it's a results driven industry, I guess he is under a bit of pressure. We've not won this year. Things need to change, and they need to change quick.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. I think the only issue I have with sort of the supporter Motherwell fans' reaction to Barraclough and most other issues, particularly on the likes of Steelman Online, and it's probably the same for other football clubs, but obviously you notice it firsthand when it's your own club. Everything seems to be black and white. You know, you've got Team Barraclough, you've got all those saying, you know, people are underestimating the shambles. McCall left, Barraclough's got a really tough job, but he'll turn it around and we'll be okay. And then you've got the other side with folks saying, oh, you know, it's not working, we need to get rid of him. It's all right to be, you know, in that grey area in the middle. For me, it's a really hard job he's got. He's got a big rebuilding job to do. We weren't in a great position. The morale was down, the confidence was down. But has he done a good enough job to this point? Probably not. I don't think it's time to start, you know, suggesting he should be sacked or anything. I think we do need to get behind the team, as Andrew was saying earlier, because, you know, we are in a very tricky position. But I think, you know, now that he's got his own players in, now that the squad, now that the lineups he's putting out are far more his own rather than the team that he was left with McCall, then, yeah, every week that goes past, that we don't win games, that we don't improve, then yeah, the pressure is going to slowly build and slowly build. So we'll just need to see, you know, like I think like most Motherwell fans, even those who were there on Saturday, you know, there's still a big unknown regarding a lot of the new players and just how good they can play and how well they can sustain their performances. So it's hard to really judge what will happen on Saturday, but I think we've got to be optimistic, apart from Buster, and we've got to, you know, get behind the players as always, and hopefully we can grind some sort of result out.
Andrew, just finally, you were at the club when Ian was appointed as manager. By all accounts, a very, very impressive interview and an impressive CV to go along with that. Does that make you slightly more positive that he has the man for the job and that he's capable of turning things round?
Yeah, I mean, you've got to give people a chance. He's only been there weeks. He cuts absolutely the right dash that we need for the club. A lot of people made the judgment, met with a number of different candidates, and he came up trumps. You have to back your judgment as a board when you take these decisions, and you have to ask the fans to back you as well. And you live and die by these decisions as leaders in any situation. The guy is positive. He's clever. He's beginning to put his own structure in place. He's known success. He's known failure. He's got all the attributes you want, and we've never been one for employing the same old names. We've always gone for, well, not always, but we've often gone for different people, and that strategy has succeeded. So there's no reason not to believe that he can turn this around and that the future will be wonderful again. And you know what? It definitely will. No matter what happens, you know, Motherwell has been through so much in our very long history, and we've had moments of greatness and moments of difficulty. The thing that unites both of them is probably the best fun I had as a younger fan was when we were really toiling, but we saw guys like Faddy, Pearson and others coming through when we were right in the cusp of failing as an institution. Good times and bad, when we put our hands around each other's shoulders, that's what our club's about. It's not about, you know, false dawns when things are great or desperation. The thing that unites us is that we're all in the same boat, we're from the same part of the country, the history we have is each other, that's what it's about. So let's not feel miserable, let's just, you know, thick or thin, no matter what happens, we're privileged to be part of this club.
That's certainly very positive words to end on. Andrew, thanks very much for your time tonight. Hopefully you'd be willing to come back on sometime in the near future.
Anytime. It's a pleasure, guys. All the best to you. Cheers.
Jay Bustard, thanks very much. Same time again next Monday.
Of course.
As always.
You've been listening to the By the Min MFC podcast. As I say, we'll be back next Monday. I say it almost every week, but hopefully in the back of 3 points. Until then, thanks and good night.